Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, May 26, 2012. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host. As we go into this Memorial Day weekend, many Americans have forgotten the reason we celebrate Memorial Day. It was once called Decoration Day and it was initiated after the U.S. Civil War to commemorate those who died fighting to defend the Union. Today, as Memorial Day, it is to commemorate all the men and women who have given their lives while serving in the U.S. Armed Forces. But to too many Americans, it is the day that begins the summer vacation period, to drink beer, to go to the beach, to fantasize. Instead of thinking about the commitment of those who served our nation, it has become part of a national escape, as many of our demoralized fellow citizens wish to flee from reality rather than face it. Well, you cannot run away from reality. Reality is real, and it's bearing down on us more harshly than ever. This weekend, we face the imminent possibility of the collapse of the Eurozone, the nations of Europe on the transatlantic, on the other side of the ocean, which use the euro as their currency. This system is melting down. There are runs on banks, there's political disunity, there's a chaos and a panic that's developing. And this would count among its casualties the U.S. economy and U.S. banking system. At the same time, President Obama has set in motion at last weekend's NATO summit a deployment of an anti-missile defense system, which the Russians say is aimed at them. And Russian leaders have said very pointedly and clearly and repeatedly that they might launch a preemptive strike against this anti-missile system out of concern that Obama and NATO and the British Empire behind it have placed it there precisely to launch a preemptive strike against Russia. So we face a financial collapse and a danger of war. And we have candidates for president of the United States in Obama and Romney who are not fit to run a local beer hall, much less be president of the United States. So many Americans are demoralized and frustrated and have lost hope. At precisely the point that those responsible for these bad policies, which bail out the criminal bankers while threatening the lives of the majority of Americans, are weak and can be defeated. The enemies of this country, the ones who have declared this country to have no sovereignty, to the ones who are opposing the Constitution of our country, are losing everything. They're the ones who are on the verge of collapse. Over the last 6 months, the LaRouche candidate slate has developed into a real national leadership, offering an alternative to the political business as usual, which has turned most Americans into self-defeated whiners who no longer stand up for their rights. On our program today, I will be speaking with two of those candidates who will discuss with you what you must do now to reclaim your citizenship as an American. We will not be taking calls on the program today because it's pre-recorded, because both of my guests will be out campaigning this weekend, including on Saturday afternoon, the usual time for this program. Next Tuesday, May 29th, will be the Texas primary, and one of my guests is on the ballot in the Democratic primary for the 22nd Congressional District, and that's Keisha Rogers, who won the primary in 2010, and for all legitimate reasons should be renominated next Tuesday. The following Tuesday, June 5th, is the New Jersey primary, and my other guest today is Diane Sayre, who's running in the 5th Congressional District in New Jersey in the Democratic primary. Again, that's on June 5th. So I'd like to welcome both Keisha and Diane to the program.
Thanks. Hello. Thanks, Charlie.
Keisha, let's start with you. You've been through this before. You pulled an upset. You scared the hell out of Obama because you ran a campaign in 2010 where you said the issue is save NASA and impeach Obama. What are you doing this year? What is the message of the slate that you've brought to the 22nd District and to the country.
Well, what you started with is absolutely true. The population is demoralized. They're not seeing the likes of any leadership coming from either one of the candidates, Obama or Mitt Romney. And they see now more clearly than ever that Obama has to go, that this president is driving the country down the road to disaster and has continued to do that with his war policy, with his policy of violating the Constitution. So everybody knows this is what's going on. But until they actually meet us, they don't have a sense that they're empowered to do something about it. And I think what you brought up at the beginning of the show is absolutely critical, that we are instilling in people with our campaign, my campaign here, and our national slate, the sense of people taking back the sense of what they are as American citizens, regaining their patriotism, not as Republicans or Democrats, but as patriots of the country. And so what we found is, for one, just a report, now going into the last day today of early voting for the primary, there has been a low voter turnout in the Democratic Party primary. And, I mean, we reported this because the sense that we were getting is that the population is being demoralized by the Democratic Party, who's providing no solution. And when they see us out in the field actually giving them a sense that we have a threefold solution that can actually get the nation out of this crisis, the Glass-Steagall Act, national banking, and millions of productive jobs, and a revival of the national economy with NWAPA, people are ready to respond to that. And
Keisha,
so what we've been doing with the campaign is taking this threefold policy throughout the district. We're going high visibility intersections. We've gone to the college campuses. We've gone to various events, town hall meetings, everywhere we can go to actually get the population a sense that there are solutions to this financial meltdown, this economic crisis, that they can act on immediately.
Now, Keisha, let me say one thing that I wanted to bring up, where you said that the Democratic Party is demoralizing people. They're actually, the Democratic Party in your district is basically telling people there's nothing to discuss, and they're trying to cram Obama down the throats of voters who already reject him. Isn't that really what you're finding with the attacks on you from the so-called official Democratic Party, in other words, the party hacks?
Absolutely, and the way they're doing that is by the character assassination, lying and attacking me, by saying there's nothing to discuss, Obama is the person, this is who we're going to back, despite everything that he's done in violation of the Constitution, the murderous policies that he's pushing. The Democratic Party says that they're going to continue to back this president while making sure that the population is going to continue to stay at home, because this is what they're doing. They're saying, we're not going to back this president. But what we're finding as a report, as for example, yesterday, what we found in the deployment, where we had a big intersection rally and we had a Meet the Candidate event, where just right down the street from a voting poll location, we set up a barbecue and tent, and we had pullover signs to get people pull over, meet the candidate. And we had several people pulling over saying, wow, I'm so glad to see this. And one of the banners that we had said, a vote for a lesser evil. A vote for a lesser evil is still an evil. Want Obama out, question mark, vote Keisha Rogers, Democrat for Congress, Texas 22. And one lady that pulled over, African-American lady, she was like, who wants Obama out? I do. And she was super excited. And we got several people that pulled over, no matter what their ethnicity, black, white, Hispanic, young, old, people were pulling over saying, I wasn't going to vote at all. I was completely demoralized by what's going on. I've been seeing what they've been doing to you, this crazy Keisha Rogers, not a Democrat, stop Keisha Rogers, and I want to help. And you had people pulling over saying, because of what you're doing, we have a sense that we can actually fight. that there is hope that we can get Obama out now.
You're listening to Keisha Rogers, who's speaking on the LaRue Show today, and we'll get back to Keisha in just a second. The other candidate we have joining us today from New Jersey, from Northern New Jersey, is Diane Sayre. Diane, you made the decision to run as part of the LaRue slate, and just give our listeners a sense of what the response has been to your campaign in Northern Jersey, where we've been organizing for a long time, but it's also been a long time since we've had a candidate there.
Yeah, it's actually been, I am somewhat surprised by how open it is, and I think there's a number of factors. I mean, one is our presence over many years, and that is combined with LaRouche's incredibly accurate record of forecasting. And we are the suburb of Wall Street, I'll put it that way. Many, many people in my district work in New York City. Many of them work in the finance sector. So one of the interesting things that's occurred here is that Glass-Steagall has become the central focus of the congressional race. And as much as the other candidates or Wall Street goons try and black it out or say it shouldn't be discussed, it just keeps popping up because it is so much on everybody's mind. And there are a lot of retired bankers in the district that we meet that come running over just on signs on Glass-Steagall. But that's one aspect that's been really fascinating. In fact, the first debate that was held here, the coverage on the front page of the local section of the Bergen Record, which is the leading daily paper in the area, said Democrats debate, two Democrats disagree on Glass-Steagall.
And so Diane, wasn't it the case that in your last debate, when a question came from the floor on Glass-Steagall, one of your opponents said, I'm not going to discuss LaRouche ideas?
Yes. He said, this is not a LaRouche forum. And I mean, and his immediate assumption was it came from us. Of course, we led the Glass-Steagall mobilization. But what you see about some of these silly people, Glass-Steagall is on everybody's mind right now. That could have been from any one of the 120 people in the audience.
Now, when in the beginning of the program, I mentioned the collapse of the Eurozone. And one of the lines that comes out from the defenders of Wall Street speculation is that Glass-Steagall wouldn't have stopped the collapse of Lehman Brothers, Glass-Steagall's irrelevant. How do you answer that? How can your supporters go out and present exactly what Glass-Steagall means today?
Well, there's two parts. I mean, one, it might not have stopped the collapse of Lehman Brothers, but it sure would have stopped the bailout. But two, you do have this very specific situation now with J.P. Morgan Chase, where we don't really know what they're ultimately going to admit to having lost. It started at $2 billion, and then it was $6 billion, and now it might be $20 or $30 billion. But that was based, they were able to speculate to that extent because they're now using the deposits of their commercial depositors. And under Glass-Steagall, of course, those deposits would be sacrosanct. You don't gamble with that money. So it's a very clear case right now in the last couple of weeks, had Glass-Steagall been in effect, that gambling bubble would not have been allowed to be created.
And are you finding now that people are beginning to get, especially after the J.P. Morgan Chase scandal, people are beginning to get a better sense of this?
Yes, emphatically. I mean, it's all over the country, but also around here, people are getting much more clear that some other diversionary, the Volcker rule or the Dodd-Frank bill, all this stuff that really was just made up to stop Glass-Steagall, but people had been using it as an excuse to not go straight with Glass-Steagall. That's all now falling by the wayside.
And Keisha, I know some of the people who attacked you refer to you as having a nostalgic attachment to an old banking rule when Glass-Steagall comes up.
Yes, exactly. They say an obscure banking policy because they know that if they actually attack Glass-Steagall by name, they're going to get some massive backlash because, just as Diane said, this has become the household name across the country. Glass-Steagall is what everyone's talking about.
I think the other thing important, about Glass-Steagall is that it's clear that Obama personally intervened to stop it from going into Dodd-Frank, and that he opposes it, and they don't want that discussion to take place, do they?
Right, exactly.
Now, no. Keisha, your last campaign, you emphasized the question of saving NASA. And as part of the three-part program of the LaRouche slate, we've added the important two points of NOAAPA 21 and a credit system. How has that been, so to speak, grafted on to the NASA fight? Are you finding that there's resonance of that in your district?
Yes. What the three-point solution has really given people in terms of the Glass-Steagall national banking and NOAAPA 21 is the sense that, one, we're talking about a science driver policy that goes against the whole system of monetarism and bailout and says, okay, we have to go back to economy based on physical scientific production. So when we were fighting for NASA in the last campaign, full funding of NASA, this policy for a return to national banking and the credit system is going to be, in essence, what is going to drive the ability to have a fully funded manned space program, science driver program. And the stepping stone and launching pad to be able to do that is NOAAPA. And we're getting tremendous, enormous response to our activities around recruiting the engineering, scientific, skilled labor base to help us to build the Builders Committee for implementing the building of NOAAPA 21. And a lot of the people who are responding to this are the people who we spoke with in the 2010 campaign, who are the engineers and scientists working in aerospace, working with NASA, who've been laid off. Because in 2010, we saw tens of thousands of people laid off in the Johnson Space Center here in Houston and really across the country. And what they are finding now is that the whole bailout policy and everything that led to the dismantling of the manned space program can be reversed, and that we can actually take the nation back down the course to what Kennedy had intended, what had been intended for a real mission orientation and science driver program. So they understand the essence, NOAAPA representing a crucial aspect of development in the direction of the way that the intention of the Apollo mission stood for under President Kennedy. So we're getting tremendous responses to it.
I'd like to ask both of you the following question, because part of what comes up in some parts of the country when you talk about NOAAPA, you talk about NASA, you talk about reviving the industrial economy, is you have an insane environmentalism, the greenie policies. I'd like to hear from both of you to what extent that's a problem where you're campaigning, and how effectively you're moving people to understand the difference between an industrial economy based on Hamiltonian principles and a broken down rubbish heap as a green economy. Keisha, why don't you start?
Well, Diane might have more on the greenies, but here we don't like greenies. So what we're finding is that with the scientific base here in Texas, in Houston, with this being the Johnson Space Center, science and technology has been the driver of development, the Houston Medical Center. Most people know that the green environmentalist policy is a genocidal policy. They have no respect for it whatsoever. And when you look at what happened, and just going back to your last question, tying it in, to the dismantling of the manned space program, our satellite, our shuttle system, shuttles, but what this is doing to our ability to even forecast weather, to being able to protect our citizens, the fact that we don't have adequate satellite systems to forecast basic weather, severe weather such as tornadoes and hurricanes and threats of solar flares. People know that going to windmills or solar panels or some type of green policy is anti-science. It's anti-technological progress. If you start doing that, that you're going to kill a lot of people, and they recognize that. And those who don't know that this is the fight that our campaign, that my campaign is waging, that we have to go with the highest forms of scientific, science driver progress for the nation, and what our national slate, Diane and the others overall are representing. So the green policy has not, it is something that we have really taken on in the population, and most people know that it's a fraud. It's something that is not relevant at all.
Diane, is there a significant green opposition in New Jersey to what you're proposing?
Yeah, and my district is very divided. Part of my district is very rural, farmers and other people, and they definitely don't like the greenies. I was at a neighborhood, well, you can't really call it a neighborhood. It was a meeting on the house on the corner of a bunch of farm fields because they're about to put a whole bunch of solar panels on one of the farms, and the residents are very angry about it. I think the issue is an economic one. The town is getting, I don't know what, it's not even that much money, $130,000 or something from a Canadian company to be allowed to purchase this land from the farmer, who of course is going bankrupt, to put the solar panel here. And the population who live there are trying to fight it, and they're having a really hard time. That's one aspect. In the Bergen County area, which is largely Democratic, you do have a lot of foolishness. For example, the state assembly just put New Jersey back in this ridiculous cap and trade, or not cap and trade, carbon tax or whatever it is, greenhouse gas agreement with other states, which is ridiculous. Christie had vetoed it before, but frankly, he is green, not because he's green, but because I think his brother, who's a Wall Street speculator, makes a lot of money on the speculation on this stuff. It just came out in the Bergen Record that this insane solar panel project that they're building in the state, 180,000 solar panels, which is $500 million or something. Anyway, they say that the ratepayers are going to be paying for the solar panels until 2028. So they don't even generate enough energy to pay for themselves. The citizens of the state are paying for this nonsense, and there's not nearly the outrage that there should be. But it's clear the environmentalism, these crazy policies are coming from above, and they're not coming out of environmental concerns. They're coming because of financial games and speculation.
Now, I want to move to the NATO summit from last weekend, because we've had a very significant mobilization. The two of you have played a leading role in calling attention to the provocative actions of President Obama and his British allies who are controlling NATO, who are putting these anti-ballistic missile systems into Eastern Europe, which the Russians have stated over and over and over represent a provocation, and the Russians are taking it as a potential first strike against them, and saying that they may respond by striking these anti-missile sites, so-called anti-missile sites. Both of you have put out statements on this. What's been the response from the organizing you're doing to warn people of this kind of provocation coming from Obama at the very point that the financial system's collapsing? Diane, why don't we start with you?
Well, actually, the response has been very good, and a couple of things happened that were quite interesting. One is we had a conference here a couple of weeks ago, and I gave a sort of international briefing where I went through this fact that Obama is putting us on the brink of thermonuclear war, that he's putting in the Russians in a completely unacceptable position by wanting to put these ballistic missile defense systems in Poland and right around their border, and refusing to give any written assurance that these are not directed at Russia. Anyway, it was about a 9-minute briefing, which we posted on my website, and this got picked up by maybe a half dozen or more other websites. And I had people calling in who I'd been in touch with 3 years ago who called me because they had seen this briefing on other sites. So it seems that there's a certain resonance for that. I think a lot of people kind of have a gut sense that we're really doing some crazy things internationally, even if they don't know what the details are. This definitely resonated with the population.
And Keisha, you put out a statement where you said that it's time for Americans to start acting like Americans and take responsibility for their nation and take it away from Obama and this British oligarchical system. What kind of response have you gotten on that?
Well, people know I've made clear statements throughout my campaign and including in the last campaign that our fight is to take down and to destroy this British empire. And now more than ever, people are getting a sense that that is, we've reached the critical point where that is absolutely necessary, where we're seeing the drive toward nuclear war. More and more people are know that this is the course of action that Obama and his British backers, Tony Blair, are taking. When they see that Tony Blair, who was instrumental in the war in Iraq with Bush, is now advising Obama and going to be advising him for the next 6 months through his campaign, people, there's no sense of that this British empire and everything that we've been saying it represents is not real. People say, we have to stop this. They see the threat of war. They see where Obama is taking the nation. And so, for instance, today I spoke at an Islamic Muslim mosque. And there, everybody knows it's a very tight situation in terms of people on edge about what's going to happen next. What is going to happen with the Russians? This war drive is very serious. They see that Obama's not backing down. And so people are realizing that they have to stand up and really take fight against this drive for that Obama's putting out for war, and realize that the only way that we're going to do that is to get Obama out of the White House now. So we're getting massive responses to now is the time that Obama has to go, and we have to stop this British war drive.
And I think in recent weeks we're seeing something interesting starting to happen, which is that there's a growing number of Democrats who are distancing themselves from Obama. A part of this has to do with such things as the West Virginia primary, Arkansas, Kentucky. You know, three primaries recently where 40% or more of the votes cast went against Obama. This is a sitting president in his party's primary. In one case, West Virginia, was a convicted felon. In the case of Arkansas, it was a lawyer who really didn't campaign. So I think we're starting to see that. And Diane, you've had a number of meetings with people in the labor movement. You've had a lot of Democrats who have, if not embraced you, at least have welcomed you into the campaign. What's your sense of where things stand in the Democratic Party and what Obama's standing is right now with the grassroots of the party?
Well, Obama's standing is horrific, and I wish more Democratic Party officials would go out door to door. I mean, I and also Rachel, who petitioned recently in Massachusetts, would get this phenomenon because you have to get signatures from people who are either Democratic or independent voters. And the first thing that happens when you ask is people don't want to admit what party they're with because everyone is so disgusted with all the parties. And they say, I don't want to tell you. And you say, well, I have to know so you can sign this. I'm running as a Democrat. Oh, and they'll turn away. And you'll say, well, I'm a Democrat who wants to impeach Obama. And they say, oh, okay, I'll sign. And we've had this over and over again going door to door in the highly Democratic areas of Bergen County. People don't want to talk to you unless you are opposed to Obama. they don't think it's serious. And when they find out you are, mostly you see people's whole expression change, their face lights up. It's like a pleasant surprise. We were joking here at one of the get-togethers after a bunch of people had gone door to door. One guy said, well, you know, you always get one. And I said, one what? He said, one Obama supporter. And that's after knocking on about 60 doors. So it really, you know, I who knows how people will really vote. You can see them voting for him to not vote for Mitt Romney or vice versa, but definitely being opposed to Obama is something that people deeply appreciate.
Keisha, wouldn't you say that part of the lack of interest in the campaign stems from the fact that at the top you've got Romney and Obama, two very unlikable people who have no solutions to anything?
Yeah, absolutely. And the population knows that, and they're disgusted by it. The fact that in this country you have two candidates that are in the pocketbooks of Wall Street and the British and have no interest in what the American people need right now in this time of critical crisis and destruction to our U.S. economy. And they're looking for real solutions. So, yeah, there's no support for either one of these candidates. And where you are finding the support is where you find the solutions with our campaign in the threefold solution of Glass-Steagall and national banking and the NWAPA program, which I have to say is a threefold solution that goes as one package, and you can't separate the three. It all has to come together in one package, and this is what you're not finding from either one of these candidates. And so if people are going to actually get out and vote for anything, it's going to be because there's something being presented to them other than what these two are presenting, which is nothing but more disaster.
This is the LaRouche Show, and you're listening to two leaders of the LaRouche slate, both of whom will be in primary elections within the next 2 weeks. Keisha Rogers in the 22nd District of Texas. She won the primary in 2010. She's running again as a Democrat out to impeach Obama and restore the nation to economic prosperity with the LaRouche plan. Diane Sayre on June 5th will be on the ballot. Before we go any further, let me just give both of you the opportunity to give out your website, and also I would encourage our listeners to contribute to these campaigns as well as to contribute to LaRouche PAC, which is putting forward on a day-to-day basis the videos and the material that's backing the fight of Lyndon LaRouche, which these candidates represent. So Keisha and then Diane, just say something about your website, where people can find it and what they can do to help.
Well, I'll start. My website is KeishaForCongress, that's K-E-S-H-A, forcongress.com. And you can go onto the website. You will find activities that we are participating in, door-to-door, that you can come out and join us. The phone number's there. And contribute. Yes, contribute. We are going now into the last 3 days before the primary on next Tuesday, the 29th of May. So everything that people can do is going to be greatly appreciated in this fight to crush Obama and this British empire.
And if you don't live in the 22nd district, you can still call into it if you have friends or relatives or people that live down here. So you can still participate and you can contribute. Diane, what is your website?
My website is dianesare.com. My last, it's D-I-A-N-E-S-A-R-E. My last name is just four letters, S-A-R-E.com. And I'll add, you can also follow both Keisha and myself on Facebook and Twitter. And that's a really good way to build the fight for these policies all over the country and internationally.
Okay, so all of our listeners are now deputized to work on these campaigns, because these are campaigns, and I know both of you have this idea, as you've discussed repeatedly with Lyndon LaRouche, these are not really local campaigns. you're in a district, but you're actually functioning as a national leadership. You want to explain a little bit of that to the listeners, Keisha?
Sure. I mean, our status is that we're functioning, what we're working for is to function as a presidency, because we don't have a president. There's a void in leadership, and we are fighting to fill that void by putting forth real solutions that a real presidency would actually represent. And when you take an oath of office to run for federal office, you're doing that not as, not as someone who's representing a district, but as someone who's representing a nation, not as someone who's representing a party per se, but as someone who's representing everyone. And what we represent is the solution for return to the identity of a Franklin Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy era of a real presidential policy towards a recovery plan.
And Diane, I'd like also your thoughts on this, because you and I have discussed this on a number of occasions. The pull is always there to take up to run a local campaign. But for example, there are local predicates which actually have national significance. For example, your press conference the other day was at a very interesting location. How do you take this local campaign and make it a national leadership campaign? Diane, are you there?
Stand by.
Okay, I think we may have lost Diane for a second. Well, Keisha, while we're waiting, the next question I was going to ask then is, in addressing the demoralization of the population, how do you communicate to people this idea that they're Americans and they have no right to hide behind this facade of fear and the sense that they can't act effectively on national policy level?
Well, I have to say by giving the people a sense of who they are as human beings, giving them a sense of their human identity, one of the things that we've been doing to affect the population and give them a sense that they actually have the power to fight is educating people on what our American system versus this British system of monetarism represents. Educating them on what our Constitution represents as defined by a real republic. And people talk about a republic all of the time, talk about a representative government, but they don't really understand that, that the idea of a nation of, by, and for the people. And you have to reinstill that in people. And the way that we do that is really by giving people a sense of their human identity, that they can, it fits with their identity as an American patriot, as citizens of a republic. And you do that by actually engaging people in a real culture. What would a real Renaissance look like? The front of my push cards that I'm getting out for my campaign says, "Elect Teacher Rogers for a New Renaissance." And this is a part of our platform, of our national slate. A new renaissance is going away from the system of monetarism and bailout of free trade and actually going to what was intended by our founding fathers in the Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all. And that means we need a real culture. We need a classical culture. We need to revive classical music. We need to revive a faith-bearing a nation and for mankind to act upon his God-given talents of how do we actually get man to explore this in-depth of space, born to Mars. These are the things that we should be doing. We should actually be instilling in the nation how do we build the nation again from the collapse that we've seen in physical production over the past 40 years, and we put our young people back to work. So this is what we're doing to empower the people again, to give them a sense that they have a responsibility to act.
And Diane, did you get back on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
Well, you missed a question before, but we've moved on, so let me give you the next question. You have a concert coming up this Sunday, and music and culture, as Keisha was just discussing, is a very crucial aspect of what you're doing with the campaign. Give us a little report on what the concert represents and how you've used music in your campaign.
Well, it's interesting because my campaign first broke into the open because a journalist particularly, I think, liked the fact that I took my choir or just a little part of the choir to a Chris Christie town hall meeting. And Christie is one of the biggest defenders of and supporters of Barack Obama. And sure enough, I don't know what Obama was doing at the time, but Christie actually opened his speech by defending Obama from people attacking him. So it turned out to be perfect. And we burst into song, a Beethoven canon, and got hauled out of the meeting. And Christie usually is so bombastic that he can shut anybody up, so we never had had to have the police escort people out before. So a lot of people thought that was really gutsy and appreciated it, and it wasn't ugly or rude. It was just Beethoven with slightly altered lyrics. So that made an impression, and since then, most of the press describes me as a musician from Hackensack, a LaRouche candidate who's running as a musician from Hackensack.
Well, it sounds like the beginning of a limerick.
Yeah. It reminds me of the musicians of Bremer. But anyway, yeah. So that was, so what we decided to do, because Boston, where Rachel Brown is running, is only 3.5 to 4 hours drive, and they have a fantastic chorus, and I direct a chorus here, is to do a combined concert the Sunday before the primary. And we're going to do the Mozart Coronation Mass, and then I might play my trombone there if I can manage to practice enough before that. And this has completely shifted things. We're getting amazing openings, like one person wanted to meet me, particularly because he saw that card, which has a picture on one side of me with the trombone, and then the other is the Mozart Coronation Mass, and it's Diane Sayre for Congress. And he said, you know, everyone that I think is really brilliant always has something to do with classical music, so when I saw that you were doing this concert, I really wanted to meet you. And we had another response I found kind of surprising at a meeting with one of these, Americans for Prosperity, where it's a lot of people just sort of obsessed with their money and their property. And one person called in, having gotten the concert flyer, saying, you know, my great-great-great-grandmother was a student of Mozart's, von Trettner, I think the name is, and he dedicated a sonata to her, and I can't believe that you're doing this concert. So the music, interestingly, really gives us access to a whole much better side of the population. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens with this.
So when and where is the concert?
The concert is Sunday at 6 p.m., and it's at the Philippine American Community Center, which is in Paramus, New Jersey, right off of Route 4. Off of Route 4 behind the Honda dealership. It's hard to get to, but people can go to my website, dianesayre.com, and get the directions. But it's Sunday, the 3rd of June at 6 o'clock p.m.
Okay, and that is a campaign event.
Yes. Yep, we're doing the Mozart Coronation Mass, some other solo and ensemble pieces, and then I also will be speaking.
All right, we have about little more than 15 minutes left of the program, and I want to come back to what I think is the central issue in the campaign, which is that there are two different conceptions that are being put forward now for the direction of world policy. One is, just to put it into a capsule form, the Blair Doctrine, which says there's no such thing as a sovereign nation state, and it's essentially a repeat of an empire. And Obama is the enforcer of the Blair Doctrine. On the other side, you have what LaRouche is calling the Putin Doctrine, but it goes back to the humanist factions and the Republican factions throughout history, and I mean Republican as in a republic. the idea that there is a sovereign nation state, which is the highest form of government, and in a republic, it's the citizens that run the institutions of self-government of the sovereign nation state. Now, how are you making this point to people? And this goes right to the question of the Obama impeachment. Let me just first ask, have you seen, both of you, have you seen people suddenly beginning to think that maybe Obama could be knocked out before the election? Are you getting a sense of a shift on that, Diane?
It depends on the circles. I mean, some people really follow this stuff closely and they see these things breaking, like the Fast and Furious lies, or even the J.P. Morgan. Actually, I think people got a whiff that Obama could be out because they know he's close personal friends with Jamie Dimon. And Dimon was so arrogant about the whole thing, and it was such a disaster that people sort of began to have a sense of that. I think it ebbs and flows as we get closer to the election. People begin to think it's less and less likely, but then something will break and it becomes an idea again.
And Keisha, not counting the Skunk Hollow Democrats, who actually are the old Jim Crow racist Democrats who want the Texas Democratic Party to be a private club with loyalty oaths and so on, are you finding more of a resonance of the idea that Obama could be out?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, with the, well, I would say this. On Tuesday, when we win this primary on Tuesday, and on the following Tuesday, when Diane wins her primary, it's going to send a clear message where there will be no doubt in people's minds that Obama is on the way out and that he can be out. And as Diane said, this on top of what people are already getting a sense of and are clear on, is that the violations of the Constitution by Obama, the fact that you have two bills in Congress, the HCR, House Current Resolution 107 with Walter Jones, Obama's war policy, going to war without the express consent of Congress, the bill that's in the Senate right now by Jeb Webb, people realize there is something in the air. There's motion, there's movement that Obama can be out sooner than we think. And that people are moving to make this happen from all layers of the population.
And Diana,
I just want to add something, because
sure.
I don't think you may be aware of this, but of course people who are listeners know that we just had this phenomenal movement built in France around the campaign of Jacques Cheminade. And one of the interesting things that's happening here, because one of our candidates for parliament, Carol Varikin, is running for a district of French voters who don't live in France, and apparently there's a group of them here in New Jersey. So I have been asked to address the voting French citizens who are in New Jersey on behalf of Carol's campaign, and the city that they're in is right on the border of my district. So it's just a fascinating intersection of this, and I think also really pulls together the whole thing that you were saying. It's a global crisis, and it's a global, people have a sense they're fighting for their sovereignty. They're fighting in Europe, they're fighting here, but that's another aspect to the whole campaign, which is quite interesting. And they were really shocked to hear that I'm a candidate for Congress here in the U.S. I'll be speaking on behalf of a candidate for parliament in France. It's definitely a different angle.
And Keisha, you just said you're going to send a clear message by your victory. This is not just a message to Obama, but it's a message to people who are internationally watching this campaign, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, this will send a message to the British Empire. This will send a message to the Russians. This will send a message to the rest of the nation and to the rest of the world that Obama can be defeated, that this system of empire can be defeated, and because that is what we represent, and everyone knows this. And no matter what happens, what we've done and what we represent is a crushing defeat to everything that these guys have tried to do in of destruction in the face of the population.
Well, I think this is the ideal point, again, to remind our listeners that the elections are 4 days away and I guess 11 days away. And it's going to take everyone's activity to make sure that this message is sent. And that includes contributions to the two campaigns. And I'll get Keisha and Diane to give their websites again before the end of the program. But it also means, even if you're not in a place where there, if you're in a place where there's no LaRouche candidate, we're beginning to see candidates in both parties move toward Glass-Steagall, toward NWAPA. And if either of you have some insight into that, why don't you say something about it? That the slate policy is really working. We're generating this kind of mobilization nationally.
Well, I know we reached out to a lot of congressional candidates on the Glass-Steagall and NWAPA idea, and I spoke with one young woman, actually, out of, I don't know, 400 or so who got the material. She had a very good response, who actually won her primary, so she'll be in the general election, a 29-year-old Democrat in one of the so-called, you know, Rust Belt states, and it is fascinating how people pick this up. The other thing we discovered is a number of congressional candidates who we had never heard of were putting links on their websites to the LaRouche PAC site to get people the NWAPA and Glass-Steagall material. And I know I have a couple of people who've contacted me actually through the Facebook.
Hello, you still there, Diane?
Oh, no. Have you lost me again?
No, go ahead. We've got
okay.
you now.
Okay.
Just mentioning Facebook.
Yeah, I got a query from someone who's going to run for Congress in 2014, who's only 24 years old, in Tennessee, who definitely agrees on Glass-Steagall and disagrees on some other things, and we're having a totally delightful dialogue of disagreements through the internet. So I know our material is just circulating among leaders, people who think they should take leadership all over the nation.
You know, Keisha, I think in this kind of crisis, what the LaRouche slate represents is the possibility of a discussion of serious issues. And this is exactly what your opponents are trying to shut down when they try to marginalize or call names. It's not just that they're attacking us. They're attacking the voter. They're saying, listen, shut up, stupid, and vote for the Democratic Party officially sanctioned candidate. And I think it's important that we make this point that the voters have to stand up. Otherwise, they're being taken for granted.
Yes, this is true. And one thing that we're finding is that the Democratic Party hacked when I won in 2010, tried to put off the voters as unintelligent, ignorant voters who voted for someone that they didn't know what they were voting for, and, you know, they voted for a candidate who wants to impeach Obama. I mean, in a three-way race, 53% of the vote, the voters know what they were voting for because we made it clear. We went on a single doorstep that we could in the district. We were out very visible. And what the intention of the Democratic Party, as I said, the party hacks for clinging to Obama and his insanity, is to demoralize the population. Their best bet, from their concern, is if they demoralize the population enough, no one will go out and vote except for party hacks. And those party hacks will, you know, continue to sign on and cling to the Obama plan and actually, you know, go along with Obama. But what we're seeing is people have a sense. What we're seeing right now is that there's a real break from that. There's a break in the population and from the Obama policy, and people are saying we have to actually go with a real solution. So, and that's what they are not finding from these party hacks. What they don't have is any real solution. So what they want to do is to say we're going to just demoralize the population and keep them from acting.
And Diane, for the listeners out there who want to organize and want to campaign, how would you suggest they address this problem of demoralization? What can you tell them from your experience?
Start singing. Join a chorus. No, I mean, it's liberating to tell the truth. I think sometimes you find you say, oh my goodness, I'm going to go out with the mustache on Obama, and you expect people to react one way, and then you're just really delightfully surprised that people are relieved. So I'd say people who feel demoralized, go out there and be bold and tell the truth. And what happens is suddenly the facade lifts, and you'll find large numbers of people were just waiting for someone to say what you said, but they didn't have the guts to do it.
Now, let me just, because there's just a couple minutes left, I want you both to give out your website again and your marching orders to the listeners. So let's start with Keisha.
My website is Keisha for Congress, that's K-E-S-H-A, for Congress.com. And my marching orders to the listeners is, let anyone you know in the 22nd Congressional District, please get them out to the voting polls on Tuesday, May 29th. Vote for me. Let's send a shocking message throughout the world. Let's set the stage for the domino effect of victories throughout the national slate, with Diane coming up next. And contribute to the campaign and just take as many of your friends as possible to the voting polls. But to get this message out to people, this is not just about an election. This is about these solutions have to be enacted immediately. We have to have people fighting for Glass-Steagall, fighting for the National Bank and the NWAPA policy as a threefold solution. So that would be my message to the listeners.
And Diane, your website and your message?
DianeSayre.com. Diane, D-I-A-N-E-S. ARE.com. And obviously I need funds, as does Keisha, and I think people really should call everyone you know in the 22nd District in Texas, in the 5th District in New Jersey, and back this fight. You can imagine the impact to have two candidates back-to-back 1 week after the next, after you had three races where uncommitted or people in jail or unknown candidates get 41% of the vote in a Democratic primary against Obama, to have two Democrats, Keisha, who has a track record and is known, and my situation where I've become increasingly known or infamous in the state, to have us then win as anti-Obama candidates in succession would just be a phenomenal breakthrough and shift in the nation.
And I think it's also important that our listeners order copies of our NWAPA 21 report and our Planetary Defense report, and we have a new report coming out this week on the showdown on the British Empire. These reports represent the kind of background material you need on the history, the philosophy, the economic theory, and statecraft necessary to wage these kinds of battles. So I'm not going to wish you luck, because it's not a question of luck. You guys have done a lot of hard work. You've got a lot of people out there with you. And you know, this is the kind of fight that we have to wage as though we're fighting for the future of the nation, because that's what we're doing, isn't it?
Yep, sure is.
So,
absolutely.
Keisha and Diane.
I would encourage everyone in New Jersey to go to Diane's concert.
And start singing.
Yes.
Start singing, that's right.
Discover your third register. And that will be our next show with Diane, on the third register. So, again, I thank you very much, and I hope our listeners will also play this interview to their friends. And let's go out and crush this demoralization. This is anti-Americanism. It's anti-American to say you can't do anything. Our founding fathers fought a war against the British Empire so we would have a right to govern ourselves. And if we give that up, then our nation is gone. And that, I think, is the other message from the two of you, from the LaRouche Slate, from Lyndon LaRouche. And so thanks for joining us this week for the LaRouche Show. We will be back next Saturday for the next edition of the LaRouche Show, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And Keisha and Diane, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.